Join your host, Des Hamilton, to find out exactly how to say goodbye to being poor and hello to being rich.
Welcome back to the Goodbye Poor, Hello Rich show with me, your man, Des Hamilton. We are full steam ahead for the end of the year now, aren't we? Kids have gone back to school, half term is finished, the leaves are off the trees, the fireworks have been done in the sky, the scary things have been and gone. All that's left is get your head down, because you've got about 7 weeks left. One, before the kids are back off school, and two, before Christmas has been and gone, which means your opportunities for Black Friday, for the Christmas sales, for all things quarter four on retail are out the window. So the question is, what are you doing about it? What are you doing about it? Hopefully, I mean, we are talking, what, early November now. You are already deep in the mire with your strategies, with your stock. If we're talking Amazon FBA, you should have got your stuff well away by now. But if you haven't, it's not too late. You've got a couple of weeks. If we're talking TikTok shop, people are going to be buying your products from now till the end of the year. And it entirely depends on the products you're promoting as to whether they're going to get them before Christmas or if you're doing any health supplements. The beauty of what we're doing is that you've also got New Year with all of the things that a health supplement can do during the party season and into the new year when everyone decides for at least 2 weeks that they want to lose 27 stone each. I hope you all know what you're doing. I love this bit. It's going to be massive. Right. Once again, we are saying thank you to Selleram Sass, who continue to support the show, continue to throw their weight behind me, and I continue to be eternally grateful. Thank you so much. I love having you on board. I really do. This is the second part of the Rob Moore interview. Now, going back from last week, one of the things that resonated with most of you in the feedback that I got was this notion of not caring what other people think. And to put it in Rob's own words, pissing people off. If you don't piss other people off, you're only going to end up pissing yourself off. That was the way that he put it. And I agree with him. I agree with him entirely. There is only so much you can do on social media without upsetting someone. And you need to be okay with that, because the world of social media is a crazy place. But let's face it, it is hands down the best free marketing tool in the world forever and ever and ever. Nothing can give you the free exposure that social media gives you. TV adverts are dying. Cinema adverts, radio adverts, they are not doing the same things that they were 10, 15, 20 years ago. Newspapers, Jesus Christ, I think newspapers in 20 years, they're going to be obsolete anyway. Because not only does one, nobody read them, two, nobody believes them. That's a double whammy. I think as the generations above me stop reading these newspapers, I don't think the younger generation are going to follow suit and treat newspapers in the same way that they used to before. Wow, that was a tangent that I went off on. Either way, what I'm trying to say is you need to be okay with the fact that not everyone's going to like you. Not everyone's going to like your stuff. You need to be okay with what you're saying, whether you can sleep at night, whether you can believe the things that come out of your mouth. And here's a secret. Not everybody does. This is all personal branding. And I'll get into this with Rob today. Personal branding is everything, but you need to be okay with the person that you are pretending to be. Me, personally, I've made that person as close to who I actually am as humanly possible, because otherwise it's a pretense that I can't keep up. I do not believe for a second people with these outlandish views live and breathe them. I do not take for a second, let's say Piers Morgan, I do not believe for a second that he's consistent in any one of the opinions that he throws out, because to do so would batter his personal branding. He was the guy that loved Donald Trump, and then he hated Donald Trump. And now, oh, surprise, surprise, he loves Donald Trump. What his actual opinion is, we're never going to know what that is. We're never going to know what that is, because it flips and flops so much, because that's his personal brand and he's consciously doing that. He's aware of it. The radio DJs on Talk Sport, for example, the radio DJs on Talk Radio, on GB News, do you think they actually believe that, or do you think that it actually caught controversy? Because that's what prompts engagement. That's what prompts business. Controversy creates cash. Hands down. So when you see these people that have been sued for libel time and time and time again, but yet they come back up and they throw out controversial comments, it's because they know that makes them money. More money than the amount they're eventually sued for. Personal branding is essential. So all the time you turn the TV on and you see someone, you think, you know what, I disagree with everything they say. Actually, I hate everything they say. Why do they do this? Why do they come out of that? It's because it makes them money. And that's not them in the real life. Now you need to know which version you want to put out there. Do you want to put out a version like that? Which is entirely fine. I mean, entirely fine. It's whether you can live with it or not, because who cares if you piss people off with it? Ultimately, I like me. I like the version of me that I put out there because it is very close to the actual me in real life. It will mean that I miss out on money opportunities, and I'm aware of that. It will mean that when I disagree with someone publicly, disagree with someone's opinion, whether that's part of their personal branding or not, I'm aware that I could potentially be missing out on opportunities, but it helps me sleep at night knowing that that's who I am outwardly and internally. It gets messy, doesn't it? I guess what I'm saying is that you can't believe a thing that you see on your screen, whether that's social media, TV, cinema, and read. But Rob gets it. Rob gets it. And sitting so close to him as I do in this interview and seeing him across the jump, you can see the shift in him when his branding kicks in. Nothing wrong with that at all. Nothing wrong with that at all. That's part of what he does. And we talk about that in depth here. We also talk about the family things. One of the things I was really proud of when I come away from this interview is that we got to talk about the people Rob had helped. Because if you complete the entire picture of who Rob is in this interview, we go from motormouth, angry, opinionated, whether you agree with his opinions or not. And I'm not saying I do with some, I don't with others. So then who he actually is as a person. And he's a family man. And he's a man that sees when other people need genuine help and he helps them. And he's a person that sees when he can change a life with the luxuries that he's been able to build up for himself. He's used them to make other people's lives better. How can you say anything about the man that isn't? That's amazing. That's inspiring. That's an entrepreneur that I want to be like. So all of the noise, all of the bluster, you have to take into consideration that he's actually got a heart of gold and an altruistic nature about it when you're surmising who he is as a person. Isn't it funny that there's no such thing as black and white? Right? But you knew that. Yet everything we're told by certain people in the world when it comes to their views is very black and white. So I'm going to leave you with that bit of philosophical advice as we roll to the interview. Welcome back to part two of Rob Moore. Roll them. I was thinking more of a case of if you're coming on to launch something, you probably need something, but you know, you're right.
I think it also depends on what the business is and your personality. So if the business is, there's stakes and risk, then you've got to be more diligent and more prepared and more thorough.
Yeah.
Information business in an unregulated industry, teaching people how to do what you've done and what you know, very low risk.
Yeah.
And you can always launch something that's not perfect and price it accordingly.
Yeah.
So let's say, for example, you want to mentor people and, you know, you've got some experience in your field. You're like a very good semi-professional chess player and you want to mentor people and you've not really done it before. And you might think, well, I want to charge 300 quid an hour. Start by charging 100 quid an hour and put yourself out there and get better with real-time feedback from, you know, what people tell you that they want and need. So that's why I wrote the book Start Now, Get Perfect Later. If you took a cross section of people who want to be entrepreneurial, they're probably overthinking it.
Mm.
And they're probably wanting all these things to be perfect first.
Yeah, yeah.
I think when you've run a few businesses, you know how to do all that. So I could put a two-page business plan together in half an hour. I could do an ideal client profile in half an hour. I could go into my social media groups and do polls and ask them, you know, do you want A, B, C, D, or E? And I could figure all that out in a day.
Yeah.
You don't want to spend 3 to 6 months figuring it all out.
No.
Otherwise, you'll never start.
No, you're right. You're right. No, fair comment. Fair comment. Let's talk about your books. 18 now?
19.
Yeah. And when was what's the most recent one?
Money Matrix.
Ah, very good. And how's it doing?
Yeah, good. Good. I mean, I always want to sell more.
Yeah.
So until I've reached 1 billion people, I'm probably not going to be satisfied. And then when I reach 1 billion people, I'm probably not going to be satisfied.
I love it. And there's this, again, going back to your website, this driving need just to change people's mindset about financial education.
Yeah, my personal mission is to help as many people on this planet get better financial knowledge. I'd like to reach 1 billion people at least in my life.
I love it.
And I think I have 3 million followers now on social media. And I think a good year will get 200 million downloads and views across our media. So I've got a lot more work to do.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. I should imagine, I'm not going to ask you what success stories you've got, because I should imagine there's quite a lot of them. Have you got any that stick out to you and any that you are so proud of that you know that's one that I can hang my hat on for the rest of my life?
I mean, there is a lot. I mean, me retiring my parents and making enough money in my very early 30s.
Yeah.
That when they left their pub with not enough to live on for a year, let alone hopefully 30 or 40 years, I gave them a house, gave them a car, and took them around the world when, you know, their grandchildren were young. Out of the quarter of a billion in sales I've done, and the 345 properties we own, and the 12 different companies I own, and all of that, that is by far my most proud financial achievement. One of my clients just did his first £1 million month. and that means he's catching me up, little fucker. So that was definitely a great moment. My foundation, the Rob Moore Foundation, gives a lot of money away to underprivileged or struggling people who want to be entrepreneurs. So one lady, her husband and her brother both passed away in the same week.
Oh.
And so left her son with no uncle or dad. And so she wanted to write children's books that could put the stories of trauma within children's books to prepare them to handle it.
Wow.
So I financed her to, you know, grow and build that business. So that was very fulfilling.
I'll bet.
Another lady, her husband murdered her son.
Oh.
And he's in prison for life. And she's now on a mission to make sure that if people, she's got this, she's creating this app that just essentially is it like a warning app if you're in trouble because of what the warning she wasn't able to receive. And so again, I financed that, and I don't like look for equity. I just give them the money. Mm. So those things make me feel good. Every Christmas Day, every Boxing Day, I spend maybe 3 to 4 hours each day just calling people. I'll just put some posts on my social media saying, if you're struggling, if you're lonely, if you're hard up. I'm not the Samaritan, so I can't give like advice on, you know, serious mental health or suicide. But if you just want to talk to a guy who's done well in business and cares, and I do that every Christmas Day and Boxing Day.
Lovely.
Yeah, so they're things I probably don't talk about much, but you know, they're the things I'm proud of.
Yeah.
I love helping people go from being broke as fuck to on the road. It's great when your client makes $1 million or 5 million or 10 million, but it kind of, you know, when they get out of debt and they make their first 50 grand, 100 grand or 200 grand, or they quit their job, that's really fulfilling because, you know, that's the biggest step.
Mm.
That's the hardest step.
Mm.
Yeah.
Definitely. I'll tell you what, I love it, Rob. My favourite thing is dipping my toe into this world, having been a PAYE guy all my life. I started this podcast a year ago, and I've always looked to interview people levels above me, but it always comes back to people, family, motivation factors that are right in there. Mm-hmm. And it really, someone said to me, a good entrepreneur is one that makes the world a better place. And every single fucking one does.
Mm.
And I had a problem when I was a kid with the rich the whole time. And I've read something where you said something similar. My mum worked as a receptionist at a doctor's surgery. My dad was a postman. We struggled, 50p in the meter, all of that stuff. We got a bag of sweets on a Sunday afternoon from the local offie. I remember eating OXO stock cubes under the stairs because we were starving and I was hungry and I wasn't allowed to eat anything else. So I had this resentment for the rich for a long time, and it's taken me 30 fucking years to realise I was wrong, you know?
Mm.
You get arseholes in the rich and you get arseholes in the poor.
Mm.
But a good business owner can really make a difference to people, and that is such a driving factor to know that I'm on my path doing that. I'm helping people make a few hundred quid at the moment.
Mm.
But if I can get to a place like you to make differences like that,
mm.
man, that's the dream.
Mm.
I love it. I love it. It must be so good. Yeah.
Mm.
That wasn't the question. I just wanted to say
that's
that.
All right.
So yeah, the EBA, your Entrepreneurs Business Academy, how's it all going?
Yeah. So the mission behind my academies, is to help people get better financial knowledge, because that's my life mission, but to help them scale their business. Mm. So there's a startup phase. Maybe I see the startup phase is once you're hitting six figures, you've probably got some basic fundamentals. You've probably made some sales. So once you're beyond six figures, we have Inner Circle Elite, we have our overall business academy, you know, where you can start to build a serious business. I don't work with millions of people like that, because there probably aren't millions of those businesses that exist. And it's a bit more hands-on, because you're doing recruitment and culture and HR, and you're building teams and levels in your hierarchy, as opposed to just going out there and selling a few products online. But I do also like working with people who have a hunger to grow a significant business, and have already done some of the basics, because they can implement what you say a lot quicker.
Yeah,
because they've done the rejection bit, they've done the fear of failure bit, they've had refunds and complaints, and they've had trolls online. They've ticked all those boxes, which sort of slow you down at the start. And then generally they can just implement more quickly what you help them with. Because we're probably, this year we'll do over 20 million in sales, but we won't hit 25. We've hit 25 million in sales in our best year, in our training businesses.
Wow.
So anyone who's under 20 million, you know, I know I can get them there a lot quicker than they can get there on their own.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely. Lovely. And how many years has that been in place now?
15 years my business training company. Wow. 18 years my property training company, and I've been an entrepreneur for 20 years.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. Because underpinning nearly everything you've done is this power of networking, isn't it? Like, even when we started talking, the 50 grand in debt, you're paying it off, but before you know it, you're working for someone, but then you got your business partner involved and the two of you start doing that. Then when you started dealing with the public speaking, you were leveraging that to meet more people and more people and more people. How important, this is a stupid question, but how important has it been to you, and how much of a conscious effort do you put into networking so you can grow whatever leverage you need in any particular industry?
Every millionaire knows the phrase, your network is your net worth.
Yeah.
Every millionaire also knows, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Every millionaire has got over their own ego and pride of asking for help. And every millionaire leverages the help of specialists and technicians, accountants, lawyers, brokers, experts in sales and marketing and branding. You cannot become a millionaire on your own. Mm. There's a saying, there is no I in team. And Arnold Schwarzenegger even says, there is no such thing as a self-made person. No such thing. Now, what zeroers don't know is leverage. So zeroers, or very low-level self-employed people, will say, oh, well, no one will do the job as good as me, I might as well do it myself. Or, you know, they're worried about handing over responsibility in case they get let down. My dad always used to say, the two worst things about business are staff and customers. So obviously there's no leverage in like being pissed off with your staff and your customers and trying to micromanage that process.
Yeah.
So your network is your net worth. And if you try and do everything on your own, you're never going to be able to get, I reckon, I'm going to chuck this out there and say, I don't think anyone could do more than 120 grand a year on their own. I mean, even people in careers who are at that level of seniority have probably got a PA or a part-time PA.
True.
You know, most people in senior roles have got PAs.
Certainly in my old day job, yeah.
Yeah. Or if you're in that level of seniority in a career, there's an admin person that you've got in the department that helps you. So it's really hard to get over 100 grand a year on your own.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get to a point where you're generating too much admin. And if you do the admin, you can't do the sales. That's why I wrote my book, Life Leverage, to help people leverage early. I.e., think about getting an outsourcer now and pay them, you know, I don't know, £12 an hour, $15 an hour, and just have them for, what, 200 a month? Spend 200 a month. but that might save you 10 hours. Mm. And those 10 hours you can put into selling, and that might make you an extra $5,000 a month. Mm. Even if you're in a job, in a career, I always say to people who are in a job, don't just wait for the company to give you admin. You can outsource some of your admin yourself, pay for it yourself. So you have to let go to grow.
Yeah, it's a really good point, actually. And I think that's worth hammering on. I struggled with it. I'm not going to lie to you. The first sort of 6 months when my social media started going big, I hired an editor to start with. And then I didn't necessarily like the way he was editing it because it was different to the way I was editing it. And it was my wife that said to me, look, you've got to let this control go, because otherwise you can't be doing stuff like that, because that's not earning us any money at the moment anyway.
Yeah.
A TikTok. Use that to do that. And then with the Amazon selling, we outsourced the prep. So we weren't packing boxes or labeling boxes up anymore. It took us a while.
So basically, here's the rule. If it's not income generating, look to outsource it.
Right.
And if you earn £50 an hour, but you can outsource something at £15 an hour, it's costing you not to outsource it.
Yeah, it's true.
Because you're doing a £15 an hour task where you could be earning £50 an hour. So people think that outsourcing has a cost. Not outsourcing has the cost.
Yeah. Never looked at it like that. It's dead right. It's dead right. It's wasted hours, isn't it? Yeah, fascinating. Fascinating. And it does come down to a pride thing. Because you think, I'm going to go off and I'm going to be a business and you're wrong. I'm a sole director for my company. But it's just not true. It's just not true. It does come down to control and relinquishing control and being okay with that. And you can put checks and balances in place. That's fine.
Well, if you have good KPIs, good tracking, good measurement, good contracts, good values, good systems documents, good one-page checklists, good minimum standards of performance, you know, all of these, like you said, checks and balance and measurements in place. You have all of them in place. Here's the thing as well. People are control freaks because they're worried about people not doing as good a job as them.
Yes.
But therefore, then they'll never attract people into their team who are better than them. Which is what I mean by you have to let go to grow.
Yeah.
I'm a shit coder. I'm shit at admin. I'm shit at my diary. I'm shit at managing events. I'm good at sales, but I can't make 100 sales a day, even though I'm good at sales.
Mm.
Let's say I can make 20 sales a day. So I am getting in the way of making 100 sales a day or 1,000 sales a day by doing all the sales myself. Let's say that I am twice as good as anyone at selling in my city. I only have to hire 2 people and they do the selling, same volume as me.
Yeah.
I hire 10 people, that's 5 times the volume as me. I hire 100 people, that's 50 times the volume as me. And then that means I can free all the selling time to build relationships with millionaires and billionaires and think about the future vision and the 5 and the 10 and the 25-year plan of my business.
Mm.
So you are your bottleneck. You are your limit to growth. Everyone thinks it's external factors or labor or other people that's the limiter to their growth. It's not. It's you are the only bottleneck in your business.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah. So what's the end goal for you? Is it an age or is it a number or is it just when you've stopped having fun?
The end goal for me is to die at about 110, probably in the arms of a 25-year-old nurse. So my wife has said to me categorically, I'm not wiping your ass when you're 80. And I have her permission, because I'm wealthy, to hire a 25-year-old nurse once I get to that age. So I want to have helped 1 billion people on this planet get better financial knowledge. I want to have challenged the system and changed the education system around money and business. I want to have made hundreds of millions doing it, knowing that that's fair reward, and die in the arms of a 25-year-old nurse when I'm 110.
Oh, I love it. I love it. But going on the education thing.
A female nurse. It's just
I'm from Brighton. You can see it doesn't matter. The financial education thing. I don't know whether I'm an optimist here, but it feels like there's a revolution of some sorts coming. I saw something yesterday that there are more self-employed now than they've ever been, proportionately in terms of the population. If people like me are seeing that there is a straw that breaks the camel's back. I had three kids and a pregnant wife when I got started. And I knew that if we were going to have a fourth child that could have stuff, one income wasn't enough. Jesus, even a low-level paying second income wasn't enough just to have the nice things. I think it's coming. The country is getting worse before it gets better. We are going to go down a fucking horrible couple of years here. They're talking about real wages not being back at real terms until we're 2027. And the energy cap's just gone up. People are realising, and they know now that they don't have to go out and cut grass or clean windows or walk dogs. The internet is there, and I don't care. We are all late to various elements of e-commerce. But in terms of a digital age, we're just fucking just starting.
Yeah, we're not. No one's late to e-commerce. This industry is 30 years old, not even. And if you're thinking insurance is probably 1,000 years old.
Yeah.
It's a very new industry. So never think you're too late to something just because you feel like you missed the boat. Look back through history and see how long industries are. The internet has just started.
Mm.
Social media has just started. Mm. E-commerce has just started. It's never too late to start. It's always too late to wait. In terms of the state of the country and where we're at, I'm even more pessimistic than you in terms of where we're at. I don't think it's 2 or 3 years of pain. I said when lockdown happened in 2020, this will be 10 years of pain.
Mm.
Because you can't spend $1 trillion, which essentially is paid by us, and there not be consequences. You can't have nearly $4 trillion of national debt where one of your biggest tax expenses is interest on debt, not even paying down debt. You can't do that without consequences. You can't lock down a country and have it illegal to run my business and every business shut down for months without it having consequences. Mm. Now you've got Labour coming in who are going to blame the Conservatives for the mess in the country, and then they're going to tax us every which way they can to make up for it. It's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. These riots weren't just about those terribly innocent young girls who got stabbed.
No.
It was years of anger, Brexit, lockdown, and, you know, the pandemic, and like the crumbling of the British Empire. Now, this is normal. If you look back through history, every empire rises and falls.
Yeah.
The British Empire is basically, it's already broken.
Yep.
And it's just crumbling.
Mm.
And we're supposed to be the fifth richest nation in the world. Doesn't feel like we are.
What does that even mean, Rob?
It's supposed to be capitalism. It feels like communism. And yeah, this country is going to shit. And a revolution is coming. And the whole political system needs overhaul because there's no democracy. The police needs overhaul because there's virtually no conviction for rape and knife crime.
Nope.
The whole financial system needs an overhaul because they're not bringing in money. They're not encouraging technology. They're sending all the billionaires away.
Yep.
All this shit is happening, and it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. And most entrepreneurs I know are either leaving or have left or are planning to leave. They've gone to Monaco. They've gone to Dubai. I even had one of my friends. He's now helping people get visas in Marbella, and he's got like a workaround because people do not want to live in this country anymore who are entrepreneurs and business people, because you are penalized every which way. We drive the economy. More than half the economy, more than half, is created by small business owners.
Yes.
Not by the massive corporations.
No.
And not by the public sector. Small business owners, which is 0 to 10 million. That's the small business. We're in the medium size, but 55%, according to Nigel Farage, of the entire economy is the small business owner, the 0 to 10 million, the person who takes the risk and remortgages their house to start their company, to set up a shop for you to enjoy something bespoke and tailored, or a little e-commerce business or something like that, and you're paying 20% VAT, 25% corporation tax, 45% income tax, what, 11 or 12% national insurance, business rates going through the roof, pension contributions. Now they're talking about taxing unrealized gains at 25%. They're talking about increasing the load on your pension.
Yeah,
you know, the ceilings don't go up. So it's a stealthy way of taxing you more. They're looking at increasing capital gains tax from 20% up to income tax rate, which is 45%.
Yeah.
The only thing left that they haven't yet taxed is your thoughts. Because if they tax unrealized gains, so, you know, Kamala Harris in America is proposing a 25% tax on unrealized gains, which means if your company is worth $100 million, you're paying $25 million in tax, even if you're not drawing it. That is scandal. That is unrealized profit. The only thing left that they can tax is your thoughts and the air that you breathe. And so there's two things you can do. Number one, make sure you get rich. This is why I have my program, Rob.Team, my digital financial freedom platform, to help people make, manage, and multiply money. You can become wealthy, because when you're wealthy, you can hire good accountants and good lawyers, and you can get those taxes down legitimately. There are still enough tax breaks. So get wealthy, get decent advisors, get that all those taxes down to maybe you can do an all-in 20%, which actually feels fair. That's number one. Number two, you can fucking leave.
Yeah. Yeah. And most people that get wealthy are, like you said, it's no surprise that the billionaires are leaving. Because
just listen to this, right?
Go on.
My friend Alfie Best, who's in the top 100 richest people in the UK, he's just left for Monaco because he said something like he has 60 or 70 ongoing tax inquiries on him.
Wow.
For virtually nothing. He uses his helicopter for business. It's a business expense because he goes from caravan site to caravan site to caravan site, and they're trying to like penalize and tax him personally on that, even though that's clearly a business asset and an expense. And he says they've just got tax investigations on me all the time. So he's gone to Monaco. He's left.
Wow.
So those hundreds of millions that were in the UK are now gonna go somewhere else.
That's it.
When he moved to Monaco, he met someone who's worth about 6 billion and they're having a conversation. And this chap who's worth about 6 billion used to be a big entrepreneur in the UK, left for Monaco. And he's like, I've been away a long time now. I kind of miss the UK. I think I want to come back. So he was like making plans to come back. And the Inland Revenue said, you need to pay 50 million in a one-off tax if you want to come back.
You're joking.
50 million one-off tax. So there's this billionaire who's basically saying, I'm going to come back into the UK. Therefore, I could bring in all my economy, all my money, all my employees. And instead of, our government going, yeah, billionaires, come back. Quick, Taylor Swift generated 1 billion in our economy doing her Wembley and other big stadium gigs. Fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
1 billion of extra revenue came to this country because she did a few gigs.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what happens when billionaires come into your country. We've exiled them all.
Yeah.
We were like, oh, Russian billionaires come over to the, London, the tax haven. And then when this lockdown happened and we wanted to blame it on Russia, we sent all the billionaires away.
Mm.
You know, like Abramovich, who brought all that money to Chelsea, not just the club. Imagine how much money came to London with Abramovich. And now it's all gone.
Yeah.
This country does not know what it's fucking doing.
Oh, it's fascinating, isn't it? And this is the thing. I've been so far removed from that. You talk about a financial scale. I don't understand what £1 billion is. No one in my show listening can relate to that sort of money. So when I had to do a post on that Taylor Swift saying, in reality, context, every hotel and pub in a 3-mile radius of Wembley made £1 million per night each per show. £5 million in revenue for those 5 nights that she was at Wembley last month. That's incredible.
Mm.
And Oasis are going to come back and do it 10 nights.
Mm.
It'll be the same thing.
Mm.
But when you start talking about that, it's so easy. And I'm going to say the masses, even though I fucking hate that phrase, for people just to go, oh, billion. And that's why they've been optimistic. Oh, I don't care about lockdown. We'll be all right in a couple of years, because no one understands what £1 trillion is. No one understands what £1 billion is. So they can talk in these fantastical numbers.
Well, if they spent about £1 trillion on the lockdown, which is about what I think they spent.
Probably right.
Yeah. That is almost one year of the entire tax revenue in this country.
Oof. Yeah.
And bearing in mind, they're already $3 to $4 trillion in debt.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we didn't have a choice.
No.
And you know, when you pay your tax, do you get to choose, oh, would you like to put it in the NHS? Would you like to put it in the police? Would you like to put it in interest? Would you like to pay for Rishi Sunak's $40 million a year private jet and helicopter?
Yeah.
You don't get to tick where your tax money goes. Do you know the biggest tax expense is unknown? The second biggest tax is the NHS.
Yeah.
And quite high up there, I think maybe third or fourth, is national debt interest.
Yeah.
Not national debt reduction, national debt interest. So the biggest amount, you don't even know where it's going, which probably means politicians' wages, expenses.
Yeah.
Then the NHS. By the way, you don't pay for healthcare once, you pay for healthcare twice, because you can't get in the NHS, then you have to pay private.
Yeah.
Yeah. I pay for my healthcare twice. I pay for insurance twice. Here's how I pay for insurance twice. I've got 7 cars. I'm not looking for sympathy here, but it's bullshit. So I've got an Aston Martin DBS. I parked it out there a few weeks ago. Some lady in like a cheap Yaris reversed into me.
Oh.
So I went to claim on the insurance because she reversed into me. She admitted it. And that put my premium up over and above what the cost to repair the car would be. But she reversed into me.
Yeah.
So for me to claim on her insurance puts my insurance up.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
So I have to pay insurance twice because I pay for insurance because I legally have to.
Yeah.
And then when I get someone reverse into me, I have to fucking repair it myself.
Yeah.
It's a scam. Insurance, really massive scam.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it really is. And the Americans, at least when they get a payslip, they see where their taxes is going. Whether that's the truth or not, I don't know. But they get a detailed breakdown of the percentage of tax going to things. So they know how much is going to the army, which is much, much less than going to the national debt interest in the States. But we don't even get that over here. We're all in the dark.
Mm.
It's savage, really, when you think about it. And it just, I agree with you. Every 10 to 15 years, there's been a riot. And again, we keep talking about the straw that breaks the camel's back. There is a spark. And then the national unrest. We've got a reason to fight, and it could be for anything. It could be for anything. The thing that happened back in 2010, no one can even remember what that riot was about. We had the boy that got stabbed in Tottenham, which then sparked a riot in Manchester. What's all that about?
Mm.
It's just because people get generally pissed off and they go, right, that's it. We got a reason now.
Yeah.
And away they go. It's just such a shame that this one was off the back of these girls that had nothing to do with it, and it wasn't in their name.
Yeah. Mm.
It's really telling. For the last decade or so, me and my wife have been saying, I can't believe there hasn't been a riot yet. Because things were just getting bad and worse and worse and worse. And then scandal after scandal after scandal. And then everyone knew. Look, I've been anti-Tory my whole life. But everyone knew Labour were coming in to increase taxes. Everyone knew it. And they stood up 20 times. No, we're not.
Mm.
And now, oh, well, that was a surprise. And they've got the balls to blame the Tories when the Tories were going, we told you you were going to do this. I mean, there's every chance the Tories knew they had to, but the Tories themselves were going to raise it. So that's a bit of a red herring in itself. But it's still, how could you just stand there and lie to us about this?
Because that's what politicians do.
They do. Yeah. And now even this smoking thing, yeah, this has gone oddly political, Rob, but it is a smoking thing. I'm not a smoker. I don't like it necessarily when people blow smoke on me. But what's next?
Mm.
They're going to take the booze away. Because if they're blaming smoking on a burden for the NHS, then take away those crisps. Take away that Mars bar. I don't want that beer. What's next?
Mm.
You can't make your rules up on what a freedom is, can you?
Mm.
Just because some people don't like it. Anyway. Yeah, really interesting. I think I'm out of questions. Is there anything that you would have liked to have covered that I never got a chance to ask you?
No, sure, show. But I do always finish all my content with saying, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. What I'll do is obviously I'll put links to everything that you're doing in the show notes. Rob,
thanks,
it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, really thanks for coming over.
I'm very grateful.
Cheers.
That's the end of what is by far the biggest interview that I've had since I started this show. And it was fascinating because as well as getting to a part with Rob that I don't think many people get to when we have a chat, we also got some of the greatest hits. Now, when this interview took place, it was well before the budget, well before Labour decided to flip-flop on everything that they stood for. And you could see that some of the predictions Rob made were exactly right. Some of them, not so much. And some of them were quite, you know, dystopiopic. Is that a word? Anyway, painted quite a negative picture. And I wasn't painting a nicer picture of myself. However, it was a great interview. Really glad that he took his time out to allow me to interview him. You notice that he didn't trample over the interview. There was a few times we were like, right, what are we going to talk about now? And he would say, Des, it's your show. Very generous, very magnanimous. So I'm very grateful to him for that. Next week, we are back with an accountancy special. All things e-commerce, accountancy, tax efficiencies, tax spends, expenses, bookkeeping, good practices, all that good stuff. And I know it's vital for an awful lot of you out there. Listen, keep doing what you're doing. Keep supporting the show. We're doing great again. There has been a shift. You'll notice I'm putting more of my usual opinions onto YouTube on a Tuesday. Do me a favor, come onto YouTube. If you're not watching this on that platform already, give me a subscribe because I'm getting more and more consistent on there and more of this mug talking this stuff at you. I really want to show you what we can do now. We're in full-time entrepreneur mode. And I want to talk you through what happened when things got really busy, when work was busy and my second business was busy, before I quit the day job, and now we can breathe and relax. That little period of scaling up seems to be a bone of contention for an awful lot of you. And there's an awful lot more that I can share to help you get through that transition as well. Have a lovely week. Take care of yourself, fella.
You've been listening to the £200,000 to £100,000 Challenge podcast. Make sure you join us next time for more real talk and some undoubtedly terrible jokes as Des gets ever more closer to saying goodbye poor, hello rich. Just a little reminder that this podcast is for information and entertainment purposes only. It cannot and does not constitute any form of financial advice. We know things are tough for a lot of people right now, so if you need assistance organising your money, please seek the help of a qualified financial advisor.